Ports, paying armies of mercenaries to protect and expand their borders. In the middle of the country, now known as the Deathlands, civilization was reduced to several scattered communities linked by a frail network of poor roads. Along these roads came the merchants, trading in food or supplies or medicine or blasters, and roving bands of freakish muties set ambushes and raped and killed, and on occasion indulged their taste for human flesh. The best known of these merchants was a man called the Traitor, and the most respected of his men was his first lieutenant, Ryan Cotter. The Traitor was gone now, but Ryan continued to lead a small band of the Traitor's former group through the mysterious, newly found matter transmitter units, relics from a world that had moved on. Ryan sat still, fighting to steady his breathing. Sweating, he wiped his face, his fingers touching the patch over his left eye. Then he traced the long, puckered scar that ran down the right side of his face. He tugged at the corner of his narrow, dry mouth, licking his lips. His first firefight back east had occurred when he was 12, 19 years ago. He was a skinny kid with a mop of curly black hair, hefting a battered armalite. It was also the first time he had ever killed a man. It was funny how you always remembered the first things in life, the first man you killed, the first woman you made love to. Both of those occasions had happened in the same month. On a trip into the Appalachians, he'd met that web-fingered mutie and blew half his guts away with the armalite, spilling the loops of greasy intestines into the man's lap. And the first woman had been a mulatto whore in a bawdy house near Butcher's Creek. He wondered what had brought those memories back.
Your mouth gets dry and your hands get wet. It needs to be the other way around.
Ryan looked to one side of the chamber and spotted Finnegan. Fat, jolly Finn, with a red stain drying to brown on his hip, where Hennings had bled on him as Finn hauled his friend to safety. Ryan assessed the other members of his group. Hennings lay still, his breathing ragged and harsh, blood still oozing from the axe cut along his thigh. Next to him, Hunniker was slowly coming around. She was on her hands and knees, fiercely shaking her head, forcing the clinging darkness from her mind. She sensed Ryan watching her and looked up at him, running her hand through her cropped green hair.
Hurts like a bastard, don't it, Ryan? Like a fucking bastard.
Yeah, sure does.
Oki, the tall, good-looking blaster, heaved herself to her feet in a single fluid movement, cradling her M16A1 autocarbine, its 11-inch barrel, like a material extension of her own sullen aggression. Ryan noticed that her wounded shoulder had nearly stopped bleeding. On the other side of the chamber, J.B. Dix wiped the back of his neck. His eyes blinked twice behind his wire-rimmed glasses.
Wasn't so bad this time. Only half my body hurts instead of all of it.
Next to him, Christy Roth stirred. For her, the passage had been worse than usual, and she was doubled over, coughing and retching dryly. Her long red hair, brighter than fire, tumbled to the floor, seeming to move with its own sentient life. Ryan watched her, still prey to his own warring emotions. The girl they'd rescued from muties only a few short weeks ago had managed to affect him as no other woman ever had. With her dazzling green eyes and wonderful body, Christy had attracted every man on the war wagon. But for some reason, it had seemed utterly logical that she and Ryan should be together. However, only in the last couple of hours had the realization dawned on him that the girl was a mutie as well. Not like the hideous creatures that tried to attack her, or any other kind of monstrosity Ryan was used to seeing in the Deathlands, but a mutie all the same. Under extreme stress, she could produce a burst of violent muscular energy that was awesome to behold and deadly to whomever it was directed against. And because of this, he still hadn't sorted out his feelings about actually being in love with a mutie. Ryan moved unsteadily across the hexagonal room and stooped by the hunched figure of an old man.
How are you doing, Doc?
The man was huddled over, his hands clasped between his legs. His cracked boots were smeared with drying mud, and dirt was smeared across the shoulders of his faded frock coat. His battered stovepipe hat was at his side, its crown dented. Tangled gray hair spilled over narrow shoulders. As Ryan nudged him with the toe of his boot, Doc stirred and moaned, his mouth sagging open, showing his peculiarly perfect white teeth.
Come on, Doc. Let's find out where you've taken us this time.
Time, my dear sir, is present and also past, and perhaps even present in the future. Is that where we've jumped?
Where?
Where what?
Noticing the exchange, Christy pulled herself up and straightened her hair.
Leave him be. The poor old bastard's never all here.
The truth was that Doc was never quite anywhere. They'd rescued him some days earlier from a tortured thraldom in a township called Moxon, southeast of the Darks. The boss of the town had been named Jordan Teague, whose corpse now lay somewhere among the smoldering ruins of Moxon. Ryan and the others had narrowly escaped the enmity of Teague's head secman, Court Strasser. Strasser had been Doc's prime tormentor and had used his malign ingenuity to constantly fashion new humiliations for the old-timer. There was something uncanny about Doc. Despite his frequent ravings and long silences, he seemed to have arcane knowledge of the past, even the far past, before the wars. But his brain had been so addled by Strasser's cruelty that coherent thought seemed beyond him. Ryan doubted the Doc would ever return to normal.
Everyone ready? Han, how's the leg?
Not bad, Ryan. I got me another if this one buys the farm.
Ha! One less leg to piss down!
Finnegan ducked Hen's attempt to knock his head off with a roundhouse right as he jibed with the larger man.
How's your shoulder, Oki?
Stiffening. Never saw what hit me. Arrow, maybe? I'm fine. We going out?
Ryan moved toward the heavy door to the gateway, but JB stopped him.
We better check the weapons before we leave. Sooner is better than later.
JB had been the armorer to the trader for more than 9 years, joining the trader's group about a year after Ryan caught her. Despite his mild, almost scholarly appearance, J.B. Dix knew more about armaments than anyone alive. When the world exploded in 2001, every single industrial center vanished in a nuclear cloud. Since then, the manufacture of guns had virtually ceased. But all over the country were hidden stockpiles that had been packed with the requisite tools of war nearly a century ago. And J.B.